all have Shabbos day. We'll just try to get more people on the street, not wear Shabbos. Like why did Shabbos become the thing? Like, why is that the thing that we use as a way of bringing people in? Someone told me this week they met someone not observant. They're starting to have them light Shabbos candles. Why that? Maybe have them start by, I don't know, any other mitzvah, shaking a lulav. You know, like, why does it start with Shabbos? So what I wanted to use was a discussion today, just on a famous teaching. There's it's a Mordechai Ben David song. Just one Shabbos and we'll all be free. So the truth is, that's a Zohar. That if the Jews keep one Shabbos, we will be redeemed. But the more precise source, or the source that I think is just more widely accessible, is a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos 118b says, Amar Rab Yochanan Mishum Rab Shimon Ben Yochai, that Il Malei Meshamrin Yisrael Shtei Shabbosos Gilchsan, if the Jews would keep two Shabboses, I guess the song didn't sound as good, just two Shabboses and we'll all be free. So they did the just one Shabbos of the Zohar. Mordechai Ben David chose the Zohar, when the truth is, it's really a Gemara in Shabbos that says you need two Shabboses and Miyad Nigalin. So we all keep the Zohar, but we first start with the Gemara. So the question is, why is it two? We always thought it was one Shabbos. Now it got to two. The number jumped to two. What does it mean that you got to keep just two Shabboses and we'll all be free? It's not just one. Just one is the Zohar. The Gemara says it's two Shabboses, and if you keep two, then we're going to be redeemed. So the question is, what's with the power of Shabbos? That's number one. And number two, why two? Why does it need to be two? And number three, what does it have to do with Geula? What does it have to do with the redemption? Why this mitzvah that has anything better to do with our being redeemed or bringing the Mashiach, so to speak, more than any other mitzvah? I saw someone started a group, a Facebook group, you know, just 1 minute or something, like keep Shabbos for like, we're like, the numbers are either jumping to two in the Gemara, or someone's found a way to like knock it down to like just get everyone for 5 seconds and we'll be free. Is it like a magic bullet? We keep it for 5 seconds and all of a sudden all war ends in the world and there's peace for humanity? Like, how does this whole Shabbos thing, how does this whole Shabbos thing work? So I wanted to give you today three different ways of looking at it. Everybody's neshama is different and they relate to this stuff in a much different level. One path is the way of, I think, a interesting approach. It's quick. I'll get it out of the way right now. From the Noam Megiddim. What two Shabboses are we talking about? So Yom Kippur is called in the Torah Shabbos Shabbosim. It's also referred to as Shabbos. So then what's the two Shabboses? This year we had Yom Kippur and Shabbos. When we had Yom Kippur on Shabbos, that was the two that it was referring to. It was talking about Yom Kippur and Shabbos. When the Gemara says, if we keep two Shabboses, we'll bring the Geula, what two are we talking about? So the Noam Megiddim says, it means Shabbos Yom Kippur, when both of them came together. That's the most powerful Shabbos you could have in a year, when you have a Shabbos, a Yom Kippur, that falls in on a Shabbos. That's not every year, and it's not happening next year. I think it's happening in 3 years. In 3 years, you can have a Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So it's referring to that opportunity. That doesn't help us because this year we didn't get everybody to keep that Shabbos, and it doesn't happen all the time. So I want to give you now two more approaches. What does it mean to keep? What I just said. Yeah.
Does anyone drive the dark Honda minivan that's parked in the west lot?
Me.
What's the answer?
Oh, they need to move it.
Yeah, I need to move it.
That's
Oh, sorry. All right, park. Record it here. All right. I want to give you two approaches. Approach number one is a more pshat-based approach, simple pshat. And approach number two is something very mystical I never heard before until a couple weeks ago that I want to share with you as well. So I don't know how much time we're going to get through. So I want to give you, in our generation, we don't start with the simple. We start with the more mystical. So I'm going to start with the deeper, more mystical approach. And then if there's time, I'll go to the more pshat-based approach as to what does it mean that we need two Shabboses and we bring the Geula. So I'm sharing with you a sefer. This is called the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. He started releasing a bunch of svarim without a name in it. We didn't know who the author was for a bunch of years. Finally, we figured out who it is. It's a Makubal in Israel, a Talmud Chacham. His name is Rabbi Itamar Schwartz. And he puts out a few books a year. And he recently put out one on Shabbos. And there's very few sources in his sefer. It's very interesting. He's, you know, very source light. He says it at the beginning. It's not my goal to just quote for you 1,000 things. I'd rather give you a deep idea. He traces an idea, flushes it out, something to think about. And this idea is amazing. It's so simple, but I never thought of it. Here we go. Okay. When should technically Shabbos start? Okay, following this idea, when should Shabbos start? Shabbos should technically start at sunset. Vayerev, vayvoker, it should start at sunset. Done. End of question. But we know that since we can't be so precise with the exact minute of the beginning of Shabbos, we don't wait till sunset to start Shabbos. Technically speaking, the Gemara says already do it a little before. So we started at sunset, we moved back a little before. Now level three. But then we came along and we said, you know what, it'd be a beautiful thing if we added time onto Shabbos. And we came up with a concept called Tosefet Shabbos, adding onto the Shabbos, Tosefet Shabbos. So now we've not just gone from sunset, you know, actually we have not just gone from nightfall. We've gone from nightfall to sunset to a few minutes before so we don't make a mistake, and now we go 18 minutes. Some places go much more. The sirens are going off in Yerushalayim beforehand. We're pushing it more, okay? So we've gone even earlier. Step four or five. The Gemara in Pesachim says, Malacha shel kol she'ein atzarach Shabbos. You can't do work that has nothing to do with Shabbos. If it has no context to Shabbos, you're not really supposed to do work after the time of Mincha and up. So let's say in a week like this, like at 1:30 or 2, you're not supposed to be engaged in labor that might distract you from beginning Shabbos. So the Mishnah talks about when the tailor could stop sewing. We don't have this as much nowadays. We have set times we go to work, and we always remember when it's Shabbos. But the basic idea is true, that you don't get engaged in a whole other project after Mincha. You don't start a whole new project. You're not supposed to have a major meal starting from Mincha and on. So we've now pushed Shabbos observance on some level already down to midday, to Mincha. Then we say, Vehechinu et asher yaviyu. You should begin preparing for Shabbos. The Gemara says how the great rabbis would do stuff Friday morning to prepare for Shabbos. Whether set the table, go find the perfect cucumber, whatever it is. I remember when I was in Yeshiva in Washington Heights, there was an Israeli Rebbe who kept, who was so running around. I remember looking for, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for a jacuzzi for Shabbos. Like, what are you looking for? You want a zucchini. I figured out by the end. We start even earlier Friday morning, right? We start Friday morning because that's when the preparation, Friday morning. Okay, Shabbos got earlier. Then there's another rule. The Gemara says you're not supposed to take a cruise. Ein mafligin besfina pachos mishlosha yom. You don't begin to, you know, leave the dock, so to speak, less than 3 days within Shabbos. Now that number's changed based on our abilities to travel nowadays and how more efficient we've become in our travel. When you could take a flight, are you allowed to take a flight Friday morning? Some poskim are very against the flight Friday morning, something late Thursday night. But you see already the halacha has now moved Shabbos to where? Moved it to Wednesday. So Shabbos is even further back. Okay, we're now Wednesday. Then the Gemara in Beitza says, Amru alav al Shammai hazakein kol yamav haya ochel lakavet Shabbos. Shammai used to eat every day a piece of meat, lakavet Shabbos. He'd have in mind lakavet Shabbos and building up towards the Shabbos. Hillel would save it till Shabbos. Shammai would eat every day in honor of Shabbos. Either way, they've now pushed Shabbos to thinking about it on Sunday. So we've started with nightfall or sunset, and gradually we've moved back how much Shabbos is a part of our lives. We've moved it back now all the way to Sunday. Says the Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, and this is his twist. He goes, the truth is, I can go even further than all of them. Where do I go? He says, already the Shabbos before. When did you start the next Shabbos? The Shabbos before. So what does that mean? And here he develops a very nice idea. So we started the whole shiur with that idea that if the Jews would just keep two Shabboses, we would all have Geula. It's not one, it's two. One is the Zohar. The Gemara says two. If you keep two Shabboses, we all would be free. Okay? Why not one? What's this idea of two? And what does the Bavavi Mishkan Evna mean that I could pull it all the way back to the Shabbos before? And I think this idea is a new, unique idea in the way of thinking about Shabbos. There's a lot of these scenarios of people lost in the desert in the Gemara. One scenario is a guy in the desert who's lost total track of time. You know, by the way, in the 1960s, there was a French psychologist who's called a chronobiologist, somebody who studies the effect of time on people. And he wanted to do an experiment where he threw himself into a cave in France, and he would have no watch and no access to sunlight whatsoever. And he wanted to stay in there for a few months and to see what happens when he has no concept of time. He ran out of the cave in a couple weeks. It didn't last long. He thought he was in there for 7 or 8 months. It is amazing work that he wrote on that. The impact of no way of having a reference for time. We all take it for granted. We see a sun, we know a moon, we basically know because our schedules, when the kids get home, the pickup, we basically have a great awareness of time. We could, you know, we could spin around, blindfold ourselves, and basically know within a range what time it is at night. But when you take all those senses away from somebody, and there's no set schedule of when meals are coming at them or anything, and he said, I really was going out of my mind. But the most amazing thing they found about it was this. They asked him to recall all the things he thought of while he was there. And remember, he thought he was there 7 or 8 months. He could only list 4 or 5 things. What does that mean? Memory, our ability to remember anything, is directly tied into our concept and awareness of time. Once you remove the concept of time, our memory fails. That's why older people, when it's tied into dementia in some way as well, when they lose their sense of time and space, memories go as well. What's the idea? Why should the two connect? You don't realize it. How many things you remember because you're hanging on a certain time? I remember that person's name because I remember I slipped right before. There was an event in your memory, a time event that happened, that therefore it helps you remember what happened. I know since I'm in Shul on Shabbos, that's why I heard that speech before. You understand? There are points that help you remember things. Take away all those points and you can't remember anything anymore. So we have a case of a guy in the desert who's lost all sense of time. How does he keep Shabbos? You're in the desert and you have no sense of time. You're dropped off in the middle of the desert. You can't speak to anybody. You're trapped in an island. How do you keep Shabbos? So Rav Huna says the guy in the desert should count 6 days and then keep one as Shabbos. Rav Chiya Bar Rav says, no, keep Shabbos and then count 6 days. What's their argument? It's like a semantical, they flip the coin and one said this, one said that. What was their argument? There's no arguments that are semantic. They're really based on something. What's their argument based on? So the Gemara says that one is arguing that we follow the Shabbos after creation versus the Shabbos when Adam was created. Meaning, when Adam and Eve came into the world, they jumped right into Shabbos. For them, Shabbos was first. Vis-a-vis creation, Shabbos was last. It depends what vantage point you're looking at. So Rav Huna, who says keep 6 days, then one, is looking at from the vantage point of creation. Rav Chiya Bar Rav says keep Shabbos and then do your 6 days, is looking at from the vantage point of human beings coming into the world. They started with the Shabbos. They start with the Shabbos. That's the two Shabboses. There's two different concepts of Shabbos. There's the Shabbos of the creation of the human being, and there's the Shabbos which culminates the creation of, which concludes the creation of the world. Right? There's a Shabbos that's the creation of the human being, and there's a Shabbos at the end of the creation of the world. Meaning, take it at a deeper level. God created the world, and on the seventh day it says, Ubeyom Hashvi Shavas Vayinafash. God rested, right? That's the obvious one. People know that God rested. What's Shabbos? The day that God rested. After he created, God rested. That's the famous one. Everybody knows that. But then there was a resting, a shvisa, he says, the B'lai Shkefna, before creation. Meaning before God created anything, before anything was created, the world was also at a standstill. Meaning if you could ask one of the first two times that the world was at a standstill, I would say before creation and the moment after Adam was created, right after Adam and Chava, you also have the world coming to a stop. So you have two Shabboses in the world. You have the one that was there before creation, and you have the one that was there right when Adam and Chava came into the world, right when God finished creating the world. So says the B'lavi Mishkan Evna, that's the two Shabboses. It's the Shabbos before there was any creation, where the world was just stopped. There was nothing. And then there's the Shabbos after God created all humanity. The Medrash says, Kishitavo Shabbos, Yehe Be'enecha Ki'ilu Kol Melachtecha Asuya. When the Shabbos comes, you should view it as all your work is done. Shelo Taharher Achar Melacha. You should have it as though your work is all done. How are you supposed to view it as though your work is all done? Let's say you got an event on Sunday. You got 300 things you got to think about. You got to do this. You got to go drop off that. You got 4. How are you supposed to see that there is your work is done? So a simple answer is you should go into Shabbos thinking that I got nothing left to do. I'm done. I put it aside for now. I'll finish it later. Says the B'lavi Mishkan Evna something very deep. Very deep. No. Shabbos is partially going back to a time before there was even a world. Before creation. If part of Shabbos is going back to a world before creation, there is no work. You have to believe that there is no work. Ein od milvado. There is nothing in the world besides Hashem. That's a profound idea. Meaning on a simple level, you can go into Shabbos and say, I'll imagine as though I don't have any work. But you do have work. You know there's going to be 400 emails. That's impossible.
No, going into Shabbos, I'll tell you, for women, it's really hard. Like on Friday, it's like the worst day ever.
That's why you prepare on Wednesday.
Really, I'm being very honest.
That's why they say prepare on Wednesday.
Is that okay to say?
What?
Is that okay to say?
No. Like no, it's not a problem. It's okay to say. No, it's not a problem.
Honestly, on Wednesday, I'm like, oh my God, yeah. It's Wednesday. I have to plan for Shabbos again. I mean, it's really true.
Okay, so the Vilna Mishkan Evna is agreeing with you.
How do they explain that?
The Vilna Mishkan Evna is saying, on a simple level, to say that your work is done is a fault. It doesn't work for you. It's not true. That's what the Vilna Mishkan Evna is saying on the first level. If you just understand it to mean that to make it as if your work is done, he's agreeing fully. He's saying that it's a fake. It's a game. We know we still have work, but to pretend as though our work is done, it's not true. He's saying that's why that's not the pshat. The pshat and looking as though your work is done doesn't mean to go into Shabbos and imagine as though you have nothing to do. Says the B'vayim Shkedevna, it's something much deeper. It's to understand that Shabbos is going back to a place in creation where there is nothing yet in the world to do. There is nothing yet. What that means is, from the vantage point of the B'vayim Shkedevna, when you get to Shabbos, it's just you and God. Everything else, even if you have the whole checklist, you have it all. You can't delete it. It's in your mind, whether you like it or not. You have the anxiety over it and the worry over it. B'vayim Shkedevna says, stop trying to fake that it's not there when it's there. It's there. It's about recognizing that all those things that are there are insignificant to the bigger things that you have in life. It's a madrega. It's an awareness. It's a spatial. It's arriving at a destination where you can come to appreciate what is important in your life and what is not. That's what he's saying. You can't fool yourself into believing I don't have all those things. That's the old way of looking at Shabbos. Pretend as though you're done with everything. Come on, you're stressed and you can't talk about it. You can't do it. You can't check the email. Says the B'vayim Shkedevna, no. You need to come to a place where you think about all the things you need to do. Think about all of them and recognize that all of those are insignificant as opposed to what is important in my life. And you don't arrive at that right away. And you may not arrive at it for more than 2 minutes every Shabbos. But it's a hashkafa that needs to come in with you in your Shabbos. That when you're davening, let's say if you want to daven a Kabbalah Shabbos, the beginning of Shabbos, or a Shacharis the next morning for a few minutes, just to think about what's most important about my Shabbos. And for a moment, it's just about a perspective. And that's the deeper pshat. That's the deeper pshat. So now, says the B'vayim Shkedevna, so when does Shabbos begin? Shabbos really begins the week before. The Shabbos before is you, before your whole week of doing and happening and coming. The next Shabbos is your life after that whole week, is what have you become after that whole week. And we're different people each week. None of us are the same people each week. I once read a great analogy. There was a Rav Gorelick, who was a Rosh Hashiva at YU. He said, I love the train up by YU is called the A train, Washington Heights. So he says, you could turn around and face a different direction on the A train. Doesn't make a difference. The A train is still moving. It's still going. Our lives are still moving in different directions. You could turn around and face the other way, but whether you like it or not, we're in a different place than we were the Shabbos before. And that, says B'vayim Mishkenemna, is the two Shabbosim. I read a stat, by the way. It was a church study that if people show up for the first time in church and then they come the second week in a row, after the first time they showed up, there's like a 97% conversion rate that they'll become a member. Right? If their first time showing up, so it applies to Shul, why not? If their first time showing up in Shul is week X and they come second week, the week later, they come directly afterwards, then you have like a 97% conversion rate that they'll become a member. I think that's the same Yisod. The first Shabbos, the first time you step into an experience, it's that initial burst of energy. It's new. It's exciting. It's without any preconceived notions. You go through a week, or you come out the other end, and then you observe it again, and it might not feel the same way as the first one, but it's something much more substantial. You know what I say? It's like the Luchos. You have these amazing tablets that Moshe comes up the mountain, and he sees all these Jews are messing around, and he shatters them, and he builds a new one. So I thought that's like a relationship with like a couple, a spouse, you know, spouses where someone really messed over the other person. They really messed over the other person. And they may never be able to go back to those first luchos. They may never be able to recover those first luchos that were there, that innocent experience of what they thought the relationship was going to be like. But that doesn't mean it has to be lousy. It just means that now they must build a second set of luchos. Now they must build something that may be different, But in some ways, it could be nicer. It could be more mature. It could be stronger. It's built by them. The second luchos were built by human hands. Moshe built it. Hashem said, you guys got to do this now. And in a sense, that was more valuable for us. It was a lesson learned. We can never go back to those first luchos while we're here in this world. That's been shattered. But maybe now that we build a second luchos, something different and more mature comes out of it. I mean, that's a good analogy for the things we do in relationships when we break deals to each other. We may never be able to go back to the way it was. But that doesn't mean everything has to fall apart. You can create something new with a second set of luchos in that relationship. That's the two Shabbases. The first Shabbos is the basic you. It's whether it's your Shabbos as a kid or someone who's a Baal Tshuva, that first experience they had at someone's table that was amazing. The second Shabbos is after the week. It's after you learned about it. It's not the same as it was before. Now you realize it's a balagan. It takes work. I got to go get this. I got to go get that. It's not the same as the first 15 times I did it. But you know what? In some ways it can be greater because now you're going in with more knowledge. You're going in with greater maturity. You're going in with the capability to do more mitzvahs as it relates to Shabbos. The first mitzvah, the first time around with Shabbos, it was amazing, it was beautiful, but you didn't know how to practice half the things. Or for those who were religious from birth, we didn't know that we're capable of inviting 15 people to our Shabbos table. We didn't know that we're capable of having, or sometimes it's nicer to have 3 or 4. We don't know that we're capable of having these types of meals until we do them, until we make them happen. And therefore, that's the awareness of the second Shabbos, a beautiful setup that I think he arrives at with this idea of two Shabboses. Your Shabbos really started the week before. The week before is when you began preparing to become a stronger person on this Shabbos, the second Shabbos that you get to. So when we talk about, on one level, this Shabbos project of bringing everybody together, let's say it did work and everybody kept Shabbos, right? It's missing, Bilvava Mishkan Ebna says, a major component, which is the second week of the Shabbos project, which is now experiencing it on a more mature level, not just as an event, not just as a big concert, but now coming back, and when it's a daily part of your life routine, how to make Shabbos meaningful when it comes up every week and you know it's coming, how to make it meaningful each and every week, that's the second Shabbos. That's the Shabbos after humans were created. The first Shabbos is the basic us, the second one is the other Shabbos. And I think both of those ideas are in every Shabbos. Every Shabbos, you should try to go in trying to find something new and meaningful. And then every Shabbos, we should go in, and sometimes it's the routine. Our kids love the routine. We don't realize it. Our kids sometimes get bored by a long Shabbos afternoon, and they can't play this the thing, and they can't go on that iPad, they can't do this. But they'll appreciate further in that they had a structure, and they had a routine, and they know they had a set thing. Whether it was, going with one parent to Shul Shabbos morning, or whether it was doing something in the afternoon, part of that routine is going to inform their lives when they're older. Those experiences and those memories become part of their database and part of what their appreciation of Shabbos is. Both of those are there in our Shabbos. That big picture, that whole idea, and the before creation and the after. That's the Bilvavi Mishkan Ebna. I want to share with you a simple pshat about Shabbos, which I think is I think makes sense when you read the psukim. The problem with the psukim is when you look in Sefer Shmos, the discussion of Shabbos, it's discussed. It's explained one way. When you look at Shabbos in other parts of the Torah, it's explained an entirely different way. For example, at one point it's explained Shamor et Shabbos. At another spot, it's Zachor et Shabbos. Not just keep the Shabbos, remember the Shabbos. At one point it talks about because I took you out of Egypt. At another point it says because I created the world. And there seems to be, and the one point emphasizes malacha, what we can't do. And the other point emphasizes because you're holy. And it's like contradictory. It's a famous question. And because of it, people say, you see, there's two different identities of who wrote the Torah, Chas v'Shalom. But the answer, says the Ramban, is that's not it. The answer, says the Ramban, is that Shabbos is both. What does it mean that Shabbos is both? Shabbos is to commemorate us leaving Egypt. And Shabbos is also to commemorate the creation of the world. What are both ideas? And I think these are the ideas behind both. Shabbos as creation of the world is that you're alive, you could breathe, you have your health, you have your family, you have the people around who you love. That's the Shabbos of creation. You're here, you're in this world. There's a world, you could walk outside and you could breathe in the air. That's the Shabbos of creation. What's the Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Fine, you thanked God you're alive. What was Egypt? Egypt meant that we weren't free to do anything. Egypt meant that we're slaves. The Yetziat Mitzrayim, as our rabbis teach us, is Yetziat Mitzarim. It's our breaking out of our confines. We tell ourselves all the things we're not capable of doing. We tell ourselves a story of how we're so limited in what we're able to do. I met a guy. I mean, this guy, he built up an amazing organization, achieved tremendous stuff, and I asked him what age he started at. He said he was 40 at the time. So I figured he must have been doing this for 15 years. And he told me he started at 33. I was like, amazing. This guy built up an organization over 100,000 people in a matter of, he got to it 4 years in, 5 years in. I was like, unbelievable. And he wasn't someone that we couldn't do the same things that this person was doing. And you realize what one person is capable of doing. Lubavitcher Rebbe started his work at the age of 49. 49 he became the Lubavitcher Rebbe. We think he started all changing Kiruv, changing everything at 22. He didn't become the Rebbe till 49. All those big changes at 49. When you think about the story you tell yourself of what you're able to do, the impact you can have in your children's lives, or the impact you could have in someone else's life by having them at your Shabbos table, it's a story we've been telling each other. And we become slaves to our own story. That's Yetziat Mitzrayim. The Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim is coming to Shabbos and realizing that I have the ability to change my life. I have the ability to do amazing things. I have the ability to plan programs, plan events I never thought I'd be capable of doing in a million years. And I can get that done. That's the awareness. That's the awareness of Shabbos. That's the headspace of the Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So you go now into every Shabbos and it has both. On a simple level, that's the difference between the two Shabboses. One Shabbos is the Shabbos of creation, that God created the world. That's Zachor Asyama Shabbos Lakacho, that remember what God did, remember that God created. And there's also the Shabbos of Shamor. Hold in that idea of what you're able to do, that leaving Egypt, that amazing cathartic experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim. I want to share with you one more thought about Shabbos. So let's review what we said so far. I started by sharing with you the idea of the Noam Megiddim. It's a wild idea. I never heard anybody else say it. That what's the two Shabboses that we have to keep? The two Shabbos is a Shabbos Yom Kippur. That's the double Shabbos. And we get it once every couple years. You get an opportunity like that. We should have made the Shabbos project that Shabbos. Shabbos Yom Kippur. No. But we'll do it next time around. We lost it. We'll get it
it's
next time.
It's not much of a Shabbos.
Though. What?
It's not much of a Shabbos.
You're not going to host people for
me. Right, you can't host people. It's true. Well, it's an easy meal to prepare. So you can't... Right, so that's the Noam Megiddim. Right, that's the Noam Megiddim. Then we saw the idea of the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. That the two Shabboses are really the Shabbos at the beginning of our week and the Shabbos at the beginning of our week. And preparing for Shabbos is not just at sunset. It's not just Friday morning. It's not just Wednesday. It goes all the way back to the Shabbos before. Each one, you're trying to become a different person. And then we saw the simple pshat idea, which I think is really the Ramban, that how come the Torah describes Shabbos in two different ways? Because one is the Shabbos of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and one is the Shabbos that's a commemoration of Hashem creating the world. That's the two Shabboses. It's the awareness of both of those ideas. It's not two separate Shabboses. It's two ideas of Shabbos. It's remembering the ability that God gives you your health, gives you your life, gives you your ability to be, to walk, to move. And it's the other idea that Shabbos is about Yetzias Mitzrayim, understanding that you can break free from your combat. What you thought you weren't capable of doing, you are able to do. And that's the second, both those ideas are within Shabbos. I mean, it's amazing. You have people around the table and the discussions you could begin are things people haven't thought about in years. They haven't talked about. Shabbos lends itself perfectly. There's no time to quickly just Google something. There's no opportunity to keep checking emails. It's a chance to stop and discuss and bring out topics. And even for our kids, there's so many different things you could do with them at a Shabbos table. You could take a riddle, a question about Shabbos. You could ask them. I know one family that when the kids started getting a little bit older, like in the 11 and up range, they were each asked. They're expected each to come with a Dvar Torah, a self-prepared Dvar Torah at a Shabbos table. That's great. Not one they got in school. They got to prepare their own Dvar Torah. They go to a book on the shelf. Now they can go online easily, but they got to come prepared with a Dvar Torah every single week. Whatever it is, you allow kids to realize they're capable of doing a lot more than they thought they were able to do, and keep pushing that bar. We're so afraid to push our kids in our generation. We're so afraid we're going to turn them off. We're so afraid they're going to go off the derech. And what we end up doing is we sell them short from any achievement, not realizing that their sense of self-satisfaction regarding Judaism is very much connected to how much they were able to achieve. Were they able to walk away with a huge database of information and knowledge and Torah after a bunch of years, or do they have nothing much to say for it? Well, then there is no sense of pride from the Judaism they look back at. So we have to balance that properly. You can't push too far. We also have to know that it's called an education, zone of proximal development. You have to get them to the point where it's just out of their reach. That's why you put the mezuzah that high, even in a kid's room. You want them to always be striving. Not something crazy they'll never reach in their lives, but just slightly. Just slightly. That's why I think you have an answer to when you look at Avram's 10 tests. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, the Akedah Yitzchak was number 9. The question is, what's number 10 then? Number 10 was finding a burial plot for his wife Sarah. That's number 10. So whatever the test was, would he negotiate for it? Would he keep pushing for it? Fine, I get it's a test. How do you put that after Akedah Yitzchak? After Akedah Yitzchak, there's nothing left. What else is left to test? So that's the idea. It's the zone of proximal development. Akedat Yitzchak didn't really test Avraham as well as this. That was so big. You know, a lot of people step up in a community when the tragedy is huge. People come out of the woodworks to step up. What about when it's more in our range? When it's something simple. It's not the biggest tragedy in the world, but someone needs you. Are we there when it's in that range? I bet you were there less when something so huge happens in the community. Because that's the zone of proximal development. That's the sweet spot. That's where someone could really develop and feel ownership over what they do. So that's what I think is the two Shabbases. Again, the idea of remembering that we have our health, our family, that's the Shabbos of creation. And the Shabbos of Yetzias Mitzrayim is the Shabbos of knowing we're capable of much more than we thought we could keep. The final idea I want to say about Shabbos is something the Bavli Mishkan Evna says. The Bavli Mishkan Evna says, and he compares it to, and this is really a medrash, and it ties with this week's Parsha Noach. So you have something to say at the table. Noach went into a teva. Says the Nesiva Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe, the Teva is Shabbos. The Ark is Shabbos. It's our oasis. It's our getaway. When the whole world is crumbling around you, when a lot of garbage is happening out there, the Jew has a place where they can retreat. That retreat is called Shabbos. Now think of the Teva as the place that housed Noach and his family. What else was housed in a Teva? Think about Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was a baby in the water. What saved him? What held him? Was that little teva. It's called a teva. It's called an ark. Moshe was in a mini ark. By the way, what's Moshe's name? Moshe means minamayim mishitiu. He was drawn from the water. What water? Says the Maral. Not just the water of the Nile. Moshe was drawn from the water of Noach. The teva that housed Noach and saved the world, it's from that energy that Moshe was pulled out of the water. So the Noach story of coming from a boat out of the water, says the Maral, really finishes when you pull Moshe out of the water much later on. Minamayim mishisiu, pulling him out of that water. So the Teva is our oasis. It's our getaway. It's our place where we could retreat, where we could hide from. And not just hide. A Jew doesn't believe in hiding. We don't go to a mountaintop and stay away from everybody. A Jew believes in retreating so they could be more energized to come back, so they can come back stronger. We didn't have all this davening on Yom Narayim to spend our whole year in davening. We had it so that we meditate so that we can be good with people during the day. That's why we meditate. We don't meditate so we can enjoy ourselves meditating. We meditate, or what we call davening, at the beginning of our day so that we can handle people during the day, so that we can be a better person to other people during the day. And that's the idea of Shabbos. You retreat so that you can come back better into the world. And that, I think, is another shot into the two Shabboses. What's the two Shabboses? There's the Shabbos that pulls you away from the world, and then there's the Shabbos that says, I'm also doing this so I can be a better person in the world. And that's the two Shabboses. That you use it as a time to pull back for yourself, to hold back a little bit, to be able to just stop from everything else you're doing. And therefore, also the other side of the coin is to realize that it's also about humanity. I'm going to be a better person because I stop. Creativity is best stoked when you just stop, when you stop doing things. When you stop, when you're constantly in hyper mode and constantly doing, your ideas, solutions for what your children need, they don't come to you as quick. They don't come to you as often. But when you stop and there are no emails to check and there is no shopping that you can do, you can just stop and think and understand, what do they need? What do they need from me? All the things I thought they were going to need before I had kids is obviously not what they need. And Shabbos is that space to come to those realizations. All right, I thank everyone who took the time and made themselves crazy with parking and came out today. Shkoach, maybe a Yavna valet. We'll see a Yavna valet, sir, during the Yavna spirit, the valet, and this, the cappuccino. Yes, thank you.